Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tony Evans of the Evening Standard and David Walker of the Daily Mirror. The players are semi-detached. The fans are in revolt. The directors are complacent. This is Arsenal's worst run for 22 years, yet despite it all, Arsene Wenger looks likely to stay. This isn't going to end well, is it, Tony?
Well, it's not going to end by the looks of it, is it? You know, as you say, it's going to rumble on and on. He said he wants to manage for another 4 years. He wants to do it in London. He's 67. He doesn't want to up and move anywhere. I'm inclined to believe he'll stay. But that puts us in a real sense of crisis, the club in a real sense of crisis, because they're going to lose. He bet the last part of his Arsenal career on Ozil and Sanchez. They haven't worked out for him. Who knows where they'll end up next year, because I can't see Arsenal paying their wages that they're looking for. And there's plenty of players like Oxlade-Chamberlain who won out there. It's a rebuilding job for someone. In fact, no, it's a building job right from the bottom up, because it's Wenger's edifice, and someone's going to have to come in at some point and clear house and start again. I think it's going to rumble on. It'll rumble on very badly.
Now, there's nothing that brings out my inner vigilante more than planes flying over football grounds with various banners on. Now, we had the conflicting Wenger in, Wenger out banners on Saturday. That just screams, we need to get this sorted. There needs to be clarity. Will we get it?
Yes, I think Wenger's going to stay. But I think the whole situation, what's been allowed to, well, the season's degenerated for them. In a football club, you need certainty, you need consistency. What have Arsenal created with all this over the last few months? Totally inconsistent attitude to what's going on, and a degree of uncertainty, not just around Wenger, but I know of people on his backroom staff who are thinking, well, where does this leave me? It's OK, Arsene discussing, oh, I will decide when I decide and I will tell you when I've decided. But their contracts run out. So what happens to them? What happens to a whole scouting network that's been built up? You know, there are huge areas of that club that would be affected, particularly if he was to move away. You'd also say those areas are also under scrutiny because it's not looking like a very healthy club at the moment, no, given the players they've recruited and also the players they've missed. So I think there's a lot of areas that do need reviewing. But the underlying belief I've got, Mike, is, and it's been there for months, the Arsenal hierarchy have always wanted Arsene Wenger to sign that 2-year deal. Mm. And I think he'll do it now.
What about the players? Now, if you look at that performance at West Brom, and you can't judge that in isolation because it's consistent over the last sort of 6 to 8 weeks. No basics, no discipline. It suggested to me that the players have stopped listening to him.
Oh, without a doubt. The maddest thing is, early on in the season, I thought they had the best shape of any team in the Premier League and foolishly lulled myself into a false sense of security and thought they might win the title. And they've just fallen apart. You can see people not putting the effort in. You see, they don't want to get involved in any physical battles. You know, the worst moment for me, and it summed up Arsenal, was in the Lincoln game in the Cup. There were two long breaks in the first half through injury. And during those long breaks, two Arsenal players went to the sidelines. I think it was Bellerin and Oxlade-Chamberlain. They had a conversation there. But the rest of them, the other nine Arsenal players, stood stock still in position and never spoke to each other. No communication. Mm. Meanwhile, all the Lincoln players were pointing, were gesticulating, were talking to each other how they could do things. and they look like a team. Arsenal didn't look like a team.
But don't you think, Tony, I use this as an analogy, the comparison with something that we've seen, and you'd think Arsenal would have learned from it. In 2001 summer, Alex Ferguson said, this will be my last year, I'm going to retire at the end of this. The state of flux that created, and by Alex's own admission, the biggest mistake he ever made, and of course, by February, he reversed it. But as he said, players switched off. The boss wasn't going to be the boss anymore. So who were they responding to? If you were out of contract, who was going to decide about your contract? The whole thing ended up in a complete mess, and Manchester United sliding down the table.
And you can see history repeating itself.
Absolutely.
You know, you've got Aaron Ramsey, basically, he's been on holiday since he helped Wales in the Euros. You know, he's failed badly. You've got Walcott, who's now being kicked out by Gareth Southgate, of all people. You've got a midfield which really isn't fit for purpose at the moment. Where are we going to end up with this? We're going to look at a summer transfer splurge to assuage the fans, but everyone else is going to be doing that anyway. Are Arsenal in more trouble than they realise?
Well, I think so. And, you know, you look at the players that Wenger's brought in. They spent a lot of money last summer, nearly 90 million. And, you know, the likes of Xhaka, who hasn't panned out at all. You know, and you look at that. And one of the things is, he recruits the wrong sort of players. You know, there's no fight, there's no heart in them. And that comes from the top, that comes from the manager. And there's a vacuum in Arsenal, and it's created by there's no leadership above Wenger. Wenger's allowed to do whatever he likes. Have you ever seen a club where the manager decides where he goes, not when the board say, no, this is running out of control? It's a very unusual set of circumstances.
I think the other thing is, Tony, you've touched on there, but I think it is a really big issue for them going forward. There is a view that Stan Kroenke and his son, who were very involved in the policies going forward, even though they stay out of the limelight, there is a view that a lot of their supporters in the hierarchy want a much more statistical, analytical-driven scouting setup, which we've seen from other American owners, etc., and in American
sport.
They've
actually purchased the company.
Absolutely. So they want to go that way, as opposed to what we would see the old-fashioned. You see people, you check them out. It's what you see with your eyes, not what you're seeing in black and white as the statistics. And maybe somewhere in between the two is the smart way. My point being, I can see this collision between what has been the traditional way. In fact, I think the collision's already started to happen. I think it can only get worse going forward because, and if we forget this, Arsenal finished second last year. They weren't some rubbing rags. It was like, you finished second, what are we going to do now to kick on and win the league? And you actually look what has been allowed to happen. It's crazy.
And, you know, where we are at the moment, if you look at Arsenal, you've got probably also a goalkeeper in decline. You've got a defence which, under pressure, switches off. There aren't very many positives that you can do. And as you say, you've got to build. If you're going to go in again, you've got to build from the bottom. Now, it's interesting that, you know, the reports in Germany that Thomas Tuchel has been approached have been denied quite strenuously by Arsenal. But surely, if they're looking to the club's long-term future, they're going to have to do some sort of succession planning, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they've only just started thinking about it. That's one of the big issues that's of the last 5 years. No one's thought about the succession, as if Wenger's going to be there forever. And if they're talking to Tuchel now, it seems a bit strange because it looks like Wenger's going to stay. You know, there should be someone internally that they have trying to develop and bring through. But Steve Bowles is obviously has no power at all. And Wenger's so hands-on with everything. There is no one inside that you'd think would stay in a post-Wenger world.
Don't forget, though, if Manchester United had lost Fergie, there was every chance that Sven was going to be the Manchester United manager. So history would have been changed. But you're right, Tony. I've honestly got this underlying belief they've thought Wenger was going to stay all along. And I noticed in a guy with a really good knowledge, in many years' knowledge of Arsenal, is Steve Stammers of the Sunday Mirror. And Steve actually wrote 2 months ago that he expected this to come to a head at the international break the end of March. And I remember him thinking, how the hell have they got it? And yet, weirdly, and maybe coincidentally, we're going into the international fortnight and Arsenal are now going to bring this to a head.
So do you think we'll get a decision this week?
I think we're going to get a decision, and I think it will be presented as Wenger's thought it all through and he wants to stay.
Yeah. So if we live in the era of, you know, highly magnified managers, let's look at Pep Guardiola and Manchester City. Give me your progress report.
Well, very little, really. He's taken over a club that needed rebuilding, and he's tried to put in, he's got a great forward line, issues everywhere else, but he's tried to do it his way. And I'm not so sure he's learned in his first three quarters of the season in the Premier League that he can't play the way he wants to play in England.
Because personnel or just philosophies?
No, I think the philosophy, I think there's a flaw there, and I think there's a flaw in the club that you can see, which is this. At Barcelona, and I'm saying this to the people around him and Shiki Begiristan helping to sign players, they have a belief in this is a Barcelona way and we'll deal with this, we will attack things. He has been fortunate, Pep, in that the clubs he's managed, he has inherited an awful lot of world-class players who have actually had a stable, established way of play, and he's embellished it. But if you think, now this is the key for me, if the owners of Manchester City want a sort of Harlem Globetrotters, this is fun, this could end up 4-4, or we could win 4-3, or we could lose 5-4, but it's going to be spectacular, then what we're seeing, Pep's the man for that. If you're thinking, as has been presented by them in the past, this is a club we want to see as the kings of Europe, the plan is to win the Champions League, the way what we're seeing now is not a team that's ever going to win the Premier League and certainly won't win the Champions League, because a team with more cunning, better defenders, etc. Will pick them off. Now, as I say, if Pep and the club's owners are happy with the plan, then the plan will work along his lines. But it is not what we've always thought the Manchester City owners were buying the club to do.
Because, you know, we're talking about a team there, David, but actually it's half a team, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very ragged half a team at that.
Front five are great.
The front five are great. But the problem is, if you play a front five and effectively a back four with one person in the midfield, you're going to get swamped. So, I mean, we saw the bizarre sight of Kevin De Bruyne dropping really deep and sitting into an almost holding position there. And it's not going to work. You know, the reality. And what amazes me, I mean, Pep has got a reputation of a genius. You know, and to a certain extent, same you can say a Klopp. They come over to the Premier League and they're stunned. They're always saying the same thing. Oh, you know, it's like the Premier League's different. You compete for the first ball, you win the second ball. And you're okay. Yeah, it is. I mean, I remember Rafa Benitez saying the same thing in a shock manner in 2004. You know, it's one of them. So they haven't picked up on that in all these years. And yet, what Guardiola thinks, he thinks, you know, I don't have to play that way.
No.
I can play my way.
Tony, the other thing that got me with this, this whole Pep experiment at the moment is this. Some really smart minds, some of the greatest managers there's ever been, back to the Paisleys of this world, worked out, you get your goalie, you get your defence sorted out, and it can be as Chelsea doing a back three or a back four, whatever. You get that sorted as your platform, so on the days when you don't play well, and it's a really pump, and you might be playing away, it is going to be nil against you. And that is the platform that great teams are built up. Then, if you start enhancing it with the Dalglishes and the Soonesses of this world, you end up with this team that takes you onto a different level. What throws me with this lot is this debate, for instance, right back to, OK, there's an issue with Joe Hart. He didn't like Joe as a fella, seen him in the down the tunnels shouting, all this routine. But to think that with all the money they've got, he's sorted his goalkeeper out, he's crazy. So there's real weaknesses, there's flaws there. And honestly, if they don't sort that out, I don't see how they can achieve success.
But with the goalkeeping, he made the classic mistake of going for second or third best.
You know? Yeah.
I'd been told all summer that Ter Stegen from Barcelona was his first choice and he wanted to come.
Yeah.
Didn't happen.
No.
Where we are with City now, do you look at them and say to yourself, he can get it right, but we've got to give him time? Or do you just say, this isn't going to work?
Well, they're going to give him time. They're going to give him a lot of time because they've built the club in his image to go forward. I think there's a couple of concerns that I have for him. I mean, he doesn't like senior players. He doesn't like to be challenged. So Joe Hart, we've talked about, has gone out the door. Vincent Kompany is in his bad books and can't get a game in that defence. You know, I know he's injured an awful lot, but you know he's fit enough to play now. You know, he wants Aguero to do more. You know, he wants Aguero to chase down three defenders and close three defenders. And, I mean, it might just be me, but I'm thinking, wouldn't it be better saving some of that energy for when he's got goal-scoring chances?
As he's got 7-7 anyway, he's not doing too badly. No,
I think the other thing is, though, Matt, as well, just to add one thing, they don't like the criticism that Barcelona team, and I just say this isn't just Pep, but the degree of which the British media are putting them through and just challenge them, say, hang on, this doesn't make sense. And, you know, we've seen other teams, we've seen great teams be built. They don't like that analysis and the demands that we make and the criticism they face through it. And it's got to be said, you mentioned about will it work. Manchester City have invested so much in that whole Spanish infrastructure around the coaching, the technical staff, the backup staff. It's got to work. And they will give them, I mean, we know, they are probably now the richest club in the world in terms of they'll just create a sponsorship to pay for whatever they want. So they can make the rules as they go along if they choose to. He's just got to get more things right than he gets wrong. And that's the challenge.
I think UEFA will be onto that, though, if they try to do that. I think there is a great will in Switzerland to stop them doing anything like that.
There's a lot of envy about English clubs around.
Oh, yeah.
With, you know, you talked about culture, Tony. Antonio Conte absolutely absorbed the culture almost immediately, changed it slightly, 59 points out of the last 66 for Chelsea. Tells its own story.
Yeah, and after the Liverpool and Arsenal games in September, he looked shell-shocked. He looked like a man who didn't know where to go. He kept, without even being asked about it, he kept bringing up last year and saying, we finished 10th, we're going to finish 10th again. I thought, well, this fella's not going to last long. He had a short sulk and then thought, well, what am I going to do? And he's come up with this system that works. And it's, I mean, there's nothing particularly modern about it. There's nothing particularly philosophical about it. But he's put square pegs in square holes, and everyone works. And you know, he runs as many yards as them on the touchline. But he manages them. He's telling them where to, you drop in, stay there, and it's just relentless from. And he's put together. I don't think any of us thought at the beginning of the season that this squad of players was good enough to win the league. And they've walked away with it, you know. And it's you can say, oh, they haven't had Europe. If this team were in Europe, they'd be winning in Europe too.
Yeah. And, you know, Chelsea had a reputation, let's say, of being a place of whispers and moans. Mm. That's another thing that Conte's done. He's actually galvanised that whole group of very difficult players to a degree and almost unified them.
Totally. And he's a very smart Italian coach. I mean, he is what he is. And, you know, we've seen the basis of Italian football and what they, and it's going back to, we said, they will sort out the defence. They'll build a platform. They get it right. They nail it. Full enough, Roberto Mancini did exactly the same when he went into Manchester City. You know, they are from a breed, and you could say, well, they'll reach a limit of you're not going to get fancy football long-term from that, but they do what you want them to do and what Chelsea needed. I've got to say, I think he's been blessed with one thing, that some of their biggest hitters, for instance, Frank Lampard and Didier Drogba, for instance, have left the building. And also, you've seen the situation where it's accepted now that John Terry's not the player he was. But again, Conte's been quite happy to have him around the place, and you won't be surprised
when
he moves on.
What do you think? What would happen to John Terry, do you think?
Well, I mean, look at the difference. Before I go that far, look at the difference between last year and this year. After they beat Milton Keynes, Tons in the FA Cup in the fourth round, did the bombshell, I'm leaving Chelsea. Basically forced Chelsea, brilliant PR move, forced Chelsea into giving him a new contract. None of those shenanigans this year. We've heard you know, sort of, often around Terry there was a sort of a rumbling discontent, let's say. And we've heard none of it this year. So he's been put in his place. He knows where he is in the hierarchy. And other people have stepped in. What do you think will happen? I think he'll move on in the summer. Wouldn't surprise me if he goes to the States. In the last transfer window, led to believe he was looking at a couple of Premier League clubs and thinking about that. There's a faint possibility one will come in for him in the summer, but I could imagine him going to America.
Yeah, but Stoke were being mentioned, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Mark Hughes has confirmed that he'd try to get him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got to say, I think John Terry, parking some of the other sides of his situation and the issues we've had over allegations of racism, etc., and problems around the club, if you're looking at him as a foot, he's probably been as good an English defender as we've seen over the last 10, 15
and
years.
And as a senior pro, he's very
absolutely
good with the kids as well.
I would say to you that I would have no hesitation in signing John Terry on a one-year deal if I was in a mid-range championship club, Premier League club, or an aspiring championship. If you had a really big club like the Newcastles this year, John Terry could have done a great job for them and help people get help people get promoted.
He would have enjoyed getting back together with Rafa.
Well,
yeah, if we assume that Chelsea are the team we're measuring everyone by, let's look at Tottenham. Now, Tottenham are playing in the FA Cup semi-final. They could prevent them doing the double. Will they?
I think they've got a very, very good chance. They match up very well against them. Even the game where they got beat by Chelsea, early on, they created a lot of space behind the wing-backs. And Harry Kane drifted in there and caused problems there for them. And unfortunately, you know, will Kane be back for that? Hopefully, and that'll make a huge difference. Without Kane, no. With Kane, I think they can.
Dele Alli, 11 goals, 12 games.
Stunning sort of improvement. It's that you hope he can keep going, because the days of us talking about the golden generation in England are long gone, and now you're looking at someone like Dele Alli and Harry Kane coming through, and maybe we've got room for optimism there. I've got to say, I really think that the winners of that Chelsea-Tottenham semi will win the cup. I think either of those two would pick off the other two in the final.
Definitely two strong defences.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you see them strengthening in the summer as well? There's talk about Wilfred Zaha going there. Now, I can't quite see where he would fit.
Yeah, I think it'd take a couple of people to leave. I mean, they like Zaha. They've liked him for a while, and they think his pace will stretch defences. I'm like you, I'm not 100% sold. I think they will strengthen, but Tottenham's strengthening is often seem bizarre to the outsiders. They've got this new stadium to build. They're going into Wembley next year. They need players. But what sort of players are they going to go for? You got two things. One, the way Daniel Levy spends. And two, Pochettino's view on players coming in. He's another manager who doesn't like strong veteran players, who doesn't like experienced players who might challenge him. So he prefers to work with younger players, and that's not what Tottenham needs at the moment.
No. And don't you think that I agree with you about Daniel's view of spending the money? He's very, very cautious. The only thing I'd say, he must be looking at spending, 50 million on Kevin Janssen and thinking, I've got my fingers burnt here. When I see Crystal Palace talking up Wilfried Zaha as a £30 million player, given what, there is no way Tottenham are going to pay £30 million for Wilfried Zaha. It just won't happen.
No.
You spoke about strong characters. David, you worked quite closely with Ronald Koeman during the European Championships. What's your impression of him and what he's doing at Everton?
Well, he's a very clear-thinking man. He's a very strong-minded man. He knows what he wants from people and life, and by his own admission, finds it easy to tell people what he wants. So at times, he doesn't seek popularity in the dressing room, the boardroom, or anywhere else.
There's that Dutch arrogance.
Yeah, there is that thing. And I'll tell you, I promise you a true story, even if you think it's crazy. The first time I ever met him, he was a Barcelona player playing at Old Trafford in a European game. And through a Dutch colleague of ours, he'd arranged for me to see Ronald Koeman at the Barcelona Hotel. So I went to see him as arranged at 2 o'clock the day before the Manchester United game. And Ronald Koeman ordered a pint of lager with me. And I sat there thinking, and I'm drinking water because I'm driving home. But I said, are you sure? And he went, yeah, I can have a beer before the game. And the Barcelona president and directors came in after their lunch to see me doing this interview. And I looked and said, do you want to swap, you know, glasses? So he said, no. He said, I could be in my room having a beer. I will sit here with you having a beer. And there was just this complete candid honesty to the fella that that's how it is. I'm having a beer. And of course, he was a hell of a player as well. Now, where you go with him, I think there is a little crossroads for Everton this year. Mashiri's come in as the new investor. It's set up that he will take control of the club. The question is, will he deliver what Ronald Koeman thinks he's going to have delivered, which could transform where Everton are? if they back him and if they're going to get the players in. It's a huge, huge challenge, but there's going to be a crossroads for them.
Because you get the impression that Everton at the moment, okay, the seventh, that's probably about right. Then they're knocking their heads against the glass ceiling, aren't they? Lukaku, a lot of talk about Manchester United being interested in him. He's got one of the, let's say, the slipperiest agents around.
Yeah.
You can see him going. Now, what does that say about Everton?
Well, it'll be a huge blow to them. Although, there is a school of thought around Goodison that his goals align a little bit. He's not that good. You know, he needs to work harder. Don't see it myself. You know, goals are the only things that count for a striker. A bigger downer for them would be if Tottenham come in for Barkley, as it's been discussed. Although, having said that, Koeman has lots of issues with Barkley's game and the way he's developed, and he's not overly sold on him. So, you know, you could see him going out the exit door. But if those two things happen, Everton would have to spend an awful lot of money in the transfer market, and Koeman has to have control. I mean, they keep telling you that they are going to spend a lot of money. So, wait and see.
Can I flag one thing? I could see Ronald Koeman doing. I could see him calling Lukaku's bluff, saying you've 2 years, you're not going for another year. So you've now Barkley's different because he's then going into the last year. So if you're saying one of them's going to go, I could see Ross Barkley potentially leaving and him saying, OK, Lukaku, you want to get out. You've 2 years to go. We let you go after another season and force the hand.
Yeah. One of the standout games when the Premier League resumes, Tony, is the Merseyside derby. What state are Liverpool in terms of preparing for that tribal right?
Well, I think the Liverpool roller coaster is back on its way up at the moment. I think people have come away from the last two games, 4 points. They might have got a little bit lucky against Burnley and against City. There's a feeling that they more or less matched them and could have won the game. So everyone will be feeling good the way it always is at Anfield. And there's a little bit of delusion still going on there. Everton will be a particularly difficult test because the way they set up. And they'll, Koeman will be very keen to exploit Liverpool's weaknesses and certainly get behind the front four, front five, and run at those the central defenders especially. But on the other hand, there's always a moment with Everton in the derby, well, there has been for a long while, there's a moment when they remember who they are and they remember who Liverpool are. And, and games turn then and 3 points to Liverpool.
Well, that's your Twitter feed sorted out for the day anyway. What about Liverpool? We talked a lot in the past about Philippe Coutinho. There's a lot of talk about Barcelona. He seems to have been slightly off the boil. Coincidence?
Well, I think it's post-injury, Mike. Pre-injury, he was. And he has the talent to be an outstanding... I mean, really, he's a really gifted young footballer who can be a match winner for you. The issue you've got with him is, since he's come back from the injury, he's looked half a yard off the pace, and the little things he delivers. I mean, there was a case yesterday when he was playing in Manchester, and he's delivering a free kick, and he completely overhits the free kick, and it flies sort of, not a bit, 10, 15 yards beyond the back post where the last Liverpool players. And you just think, for the quality that Coutinho's got, that's not him. He's not on his game yet. But clearly Klopp is working on the basis. The best way of getting him in, obviously subbed him later, but the best way of getting him right is to keep him in the team. And that boy has qualities. He's a potential match winner.
He's a long way from the finished product. He's very direct. Love how direct he is. He's always looking to get the ball into the box or shoot. But, back when people were talking about him going to Barcelona, I'm like, Barcelona, really?
Mm. Yeah.
Look at Emre Can. Very, very good against City. But I always get the impression that Liverpool need Jordan Henderson.
Without a doubt, Jordan Henderson had some dynamism and an effort. He takes a lot of stick from the fans, which I've never quite understood. He does an awful lot of work protecting Milner at left back. Against City is the sort of game where Emre Can will shine. But it's not a congested midfield. The ball's not pinging about there. You don't have to have a snap to the ball. He's playing against the only man with a larger turn and circle than him in Yaya Touré. And you know, it was survival of the slowest there, wasn't it, in that midfield? So he's against Everton, I think he'll find it far more difficult. He didn't have a good game at Goodison, and I said you can pass the ball around him. And what Henderson does, Henderson gets you up and down and side to side and breaks a lot of stuff up.
Mm. Let's look at Manchester United, David. 5 points behind Liverpool, mm. 2 games in hand. Jose Mourinho has done a 12-page interview in France Football on Tuesday's edition, mm. in which he characterises himself as the calm one.
Mm.
Could have fooled me.
Totally. Absolutely. But Jose does keep sort of recreating himself in different guises. I think you can see progress in what they've been trying to achieve this year, and obviously they've got a trophy in the locker already. I think it's an intriguing one. I can see why he's going for the next targets, winning the Europa League to get into the Champions League, because they're going to face so many fixtures with, catching up with games. And it's going to be very tough for them to hit the top four the way that they're going. But the way they keep grinding things out, and it's got to be said, the number of players, because Manchester United's senior squad, I would argue, is probably the best in the Premier League now in terms of numbers,
depth, experience.
Yeah, the whole thing, what they've got. And, you may say, well, now he doesn't appear to want to pick Wayne Rooney and others. These people drift in and drift out. But you look at the numbers of experienced pros he can call on. Mm. And I've got to say, for me, one of the stars of the season, one of the unsung heroes, is Antonio Valencia. Valencia's had an incredible year, and yet still gets very few mentions about, who have been the great right-backs and people who can bomb on. And he's had a great year. So I think Man U will finish strongly. I think Mourinho can guide them through that, whether they'll end up in the top four. But I think he's right, the Europa League's the target.
I think that one of the problems with Manchester United is the people who have had great years. What they bring to us is a little bit of liability as well. I mean, Valencia has been superb going forward. He's vulnerable at the back, and that back four. Any back four with Phil Jones in is always going to have problems. but again, Ibrahimovic, who's a magnificent player and has been superb. He's lit up the Premier League.
And will get another year.
Yeah, he will get another year, but he slows them down. I mean, if you look at them against Middlesbrough, where they've got, Lingard and Rashford in there with all that pace, you can see defences backpedaling, better defences than Middlesbrough will struggle against their
but
pace.
But none of them, Tony, have that lethal eye for goal that Ibrahimovic, the number of goals. That's what he offers you, that presence in there and his technical ability. He is superb. I agree, he doesn't have the things, but Rashford doesn't finish like Ibrahimovic yet.
Mm. Well, Martial, though, if you can get him back into the team, he is a finisher.
Mm. Let's look at England, because it is United-related to a degree. Gareth Southgate's come in, no more Mr. Nice Guy. We mentioned Walcott being sidelined. Looks like the end for Wayne Rooney.
Well, yeah, I think he's reached the natural point in his career where it's he's not going to be first choice for England. He's not going to be captain for England. He's not going to be first choice for Manchester United. And he's had a tremendous career, but he has been shown signs of decline for a couple of years, and it's difficult for him to arrest it when Mourinho's not picking him on a week-to-week basis. So it makes sense to me for Southgate to have him around as part of the squad, and certainly to provide some sort of sense of elder statesmanship, if not leadership, on the pitch. And I think you'd be mad to discard him from the squad, but you've got to be looking to go forward, and you've got to be looking forward to where we'll be this time next year. With a World Cup looming.
Yeah. I've been impressed with Gareth Southgate since I knew him as a kid at Crystal Palace, where he actually wanted to be a sports journalist. God help him. Mm. If you look at him now, have the FA actually stumbled into the right candidate? Because here's someone who understands what's coming through. He agrees with the system. So, he's well prepared and well versed in what is a distinctive job.
At the moment, given what we can see with English football, he is the perfect appointment, because forget the golden generation we've talked about, you know, with the last remnants with probably Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard there. We've seen Scholes and Beckham go before that, but they've gone. If you look at it now, Wayne Rooney was in there. Wayne Rooney's been binned, quite rightly, by Gareth Southgate. So, in effect, you've got to look at a different type of players, those who've come through the under-18s, under-21s, probably not had a spectacular time. And, you know, people could say, well, Dele Alli's doing great and he's only young. But he came out of MK Dons. You know, Harry Kane had been out alone in a load of places. Mm. So they tend to be more grounded players, probably without the illustrious, you know, in the Liverpool team at 16, 17, he's going to be the next whatever. This is a much more grounded scenario, and I think he's perfect for that. The danger is, of course, before we then suggest that Gareth is going to be the best England manager since Sir Alf, the danger is those players will decide how he is perceived in years to come, and they will be the ones who get found out as, are they ever going to be good enough?
Yeah, will we, Tony? And this is a question for ourselves more than anything else. Will the balloon go up if England get beaten badly in Germany on Wednesday?
There's always a little bit of hysteria around England. You know, it's going to happen anyway. But I don't think it'll be too much of an issue. I don't think they'll get beaten too badly. I think one of the problems, you know, I agree with David, talking about the golden generation. The golden generation were, in fact, the most selfish bunch of stiffs ever to be gathered under an England cap. They all thought the team should be built around them, and none of them were prepared to subvert the game to each other. And the managers were a little bit like that as well. They bought into it, and none of them got a grip on the team ethic. One of the things where Gareth Southgate is lucky in such a way, he's got a lot of youth, he's got a lot of pace. The egos, by comparison, are relatively small. And he's got a better connection with the players and the players of this generation than perhaps some of the previous managers had with their generation. So I think he's got them moving in the right direction. Yes, there's always hysteria around England, and they're certainly nowhere near a World Cup winning team at the moment. But given what Southgate's got, they can be a lot closer to it than they have been by this time next year.
And will Jermaine Defoe be part of that, you know, bold new future? 34 years old. You know, when he went to the major MLS, we all thought, well, that's it then, see you later. But he's come back. He's the only player that Sunderland have really got, isn't he?
Mm. Well, he does what comes naturally to him. He scores goals. So, in the circumstance, let's be candid, if it hadn't been for strikers crying off, Jermaine Defoe would not be in an England squad now. But on his current form, yes, he deserves the call. And I say current form, he's not scored for a few games now for Sunderland. But in the form of the season, yes, he deserves it. We're kidding ourselves if we think Jermaine Defoe's the future. He gets us through a tight situation over the next two games. But once the others are back, I don't think Jermaine Defoe, I don't think Gareth Southgate would present him as, this is my long-term solution now.
Mm. Injury crisis call-up.
Yeah. Sunderland, though, if we're talking about crises, it looks like the owner is going to stay with David Moyes, one win in 13, notwithstanding that. Mm. They look nailed on to go down, don't they?
Oh, yeah, they're a mess. The one thing that shocked me a little bit is how disorganised they are at the back. I mean, compare it to when Allardyce went in there. The one thing he did was get the back four, he got a better structure. They look like a pre-Allardyce team. They're all over the place. And there's a lot of players there who, in an ideal world, they'd need to get rid of next year in the Championship. He's decided to stick with Moyes. It looks that way, to bring them back up. It's going to be a tough ask.
If you look at that, you know, they look to me like a bang average Championship team at the moment.
Yeah, great club, great support. You know,
means, unbelievable.
Yeah,
support.
Means so much to that community. They, you know, stick with it mainly through thin and thin. But you have got a club that's up for sale, so you've not got an American investor who wants to put two dimes in the place. You've just got, and I've got to say, that's been probably one of the biggest problems David Moyes has had to face, which is lack of investment to even shake things up, and where they've been stripping the team, selling people, and basically the owners said, there's nothing coming back to you now. So David's had to work with that. I hate to say it, Mike, but Sunderland are getting what happens when you lack any real change in investment, any change of recruitment policy, and you've been going down the pan. So the normal thing is, and it would happen with Sam, it happened with Advocaat, you end up with this suddenly a Sunderland rally. You don't see it this time, do you?
No, I mean, eventually it'll fail. And, you know, the whole recruitment system has been, it's been very flawed there for the best part of 5 years. I mean, this storm has been building. And I don't think there's any will from the owner to actually change things and get moving in the right direction, which is mad, because if they go down, suddenly the golden goose is dead.
Let's look at the whole relegation picture. You know, you mentioned Big Sam. It looks like Palace are getting the Big Sam effect.
They've got some impetus now, haven't they? At last. It's taken a while, but they're getting it.
Burnley, Bournemouth, moving away. If any team is going to get dragged in, what about Watford?
I was just going to say, Mike, it's a team that you, as a boy, used to go and see. They're on 31 points now. I think, and you can see how many Chelsea in the top one or two are taking. This season, you may find 35 gives you safety. I think it's going to be quite a low number. So Watford are on 31. They are the ones you would see as being in danger. But I've got to say, so they're one win and a point away from it.
And they've got Sunderland next.
Yeah, exactly. So I look at that bottom, probably the bottom four, and I think the three to go down will come from it. Invariably, the three with the worst goal differences go down. If you look at that now, that would actually see Swansea go down. That's where you'd be, and Middlesbrough would get out.
Swansea, in the BT Sport game on Saturday, looked to me to almost like be betwixt and between. They were almost too defensive to actually make the best of their natural strengths.
Yeah, without a doubt, and it's probably part of the learning process. You know, but if they get the defence sorted, they should be all right. I mean, having said that, what tends to keep teams up at this time of year is goals. So, you know, if they don't concede, because at the beginning of the season, you know, you talk about the goal difference, they were just leaking and leaking and leaking. They've stopped that. So at least give them a platform.
And they had a run of, you know, two or three decent results, but it's on the back of Llorente scoring goals. You know, that's what you need. Somebody comes good like that. Now, I mean, you know, there's a great example. Great Spanish striker who can finish, but he isn't going to run round channels and close. But that is not his game. But if you get him in the box, be it, and particularly in the air, he's dynamite. So they've got to find ways to supply him and keep him fit. And then you've got the chance.
The thing that impresses me about Paul Clement is, you know, he is a product of a certain culture. You know, the analyst was talking the other week that when, you know, Bob Bradley was there, the opposition report was about 5 pages. With Clement, it's 30 pages. So they are looking at it. You know, every dot and comma matters in their preparation. Is that enough to keep them up?
I don't think at this stage that'll be enough to keep them up. But I think if they can get the ball to Llorente and then get Sigurdsson on the edge of the box, that'll be enough. They've got two goal scorers there. You get platform with a good defence, get the ball up to them, there'll be no problem.
What about Hull City, David?
Well, they had the rally, didn't they? They changed manager and Mickey Phelan went and things, and some of the results were cup ties, etc. So obviously they weren't getting any points for them. It looks as if that's drifted. Again, a club that's been, they've attempted to sell it, they've been selling off their main assets, and they're getting what, and I was just saying they deserve, because I'm sure, you know, some of their players have been working the socks off trying to turn it round, and the new coach came in and offered some suggestion of success. But it's petered out, man. That's where I think they and Sunderland are two that are going to go down. Two of the three.
They started the season in a crisis. They didn't have enough players. And when they did get enough players, there wasn't enough quality there. I mean, I'm surprised they've made such a good fist of it.
Correct.
And, you know, I think they've actually punched above the weight at times this season. But sadly, they're going down.
Middlesbrough's next three games in 8 days. Swansea, Hull and Burnley. Now, that is their chance. That is their chance. Have they made the right choice in one, sacking Karanka, but two, giving the job to his number two, Steve Agnew?
Well, I've got a lot of time for Steve Gibson in the sense of he's been a very loyal chairman in the past and he's been great for that club.
The best owner in the league.
Absolutely, the money's ploughed in. He must have had real grounds for the grievance against Karanka to say this has got to end. The one that surprised me, I must admit this, he's always said that the best captain and the on-field leader they ever had in his time there was Nigel Pearson. When they made the change, I honestly thought Pearson would end up going back in because they're going back in, going in as manager this time, a head coach, because I thought Steve knows him. Nigel can be a prickly character, he can be difficult, but because of the relationship, because of what they knew and the fact that Pearson knows that club, I thought that was tailor-made, and obviously he does have a track record with Leicester of keeping teams up. So I thought that was the one I would have seen. I think the Steve Agnew thing is much more, well, it's riddled with issues over can he command the respect in the dressing room? Will he drive them forward? Yeah, he's got a lot of experience as a lesser coach. For me, I was amazed that they didn't just put Pearson in.
Fatal mistake?
I think so. I think so. It's a tough job there because, I mean, I saw them at Crystal Palace and they were woeful. Mm. You know, they were completely disorganised at the back. To be fair, Karanka tried to play a three at the back and it didn't work. But they never got organised for the rest of the game and certainly nothing going forward. You know, your senior professional up there, Stuart Downer, you're going down.
So if we wrap up, you're three to go down.
Three to go down. I think it's Sunderland, Middlesbrough and Hull.
David?
I think it's definitely Sunderland and Hull. I think the other one is dependent on this Middlesbrough. It will be either Middlesbrough or Swansea.
So let's then look upwards. Who's going to make the top four?
I think it's probably going to be as it is now. I think, obviously, Chelsea have walked away with it. Tottenham are going to finish second, notwithstanding Harry Kane's injury. I think City will be third and Liverpool fourth.
I think there's one scenario I could see change. I think the top two will stay there. So you've got Chelsea, Tottenham. I think the Manchester derby could be critical to this. I still think United could nick fourth place, in which case it would be a get over City. I think Liverpool will stay in the top four.
Now, I think it's changing all the time, but for me, United to sneak into the top four with Chelsea, Spurs and City. As for relegation, bye-bye Sunderland, Middlesbrough and Hull. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.